please could you introduce yourselves individually?
Hello, I'm Ben Sadler. I'm one half of Juno Projects.
Hi, I'm Phil Duckworth. I'm the other half.
How did you both meet?
We met a long time ago, about 20 years ago, and we were both working as technicians at Icon Gallery in Birmingham. We kind of bonded over a mutual love of certain bands and started a band together.
What's the name of the band?
It's a slightly odd name, and it's quite hard to say, especially as we based it on a German word, which we're still not percent sure how to pronounce, but it's Owner Projects, which we got from things like Gerhard Richter paintings that are often called like Owner Titel, so untitled or without title, I think it means. It was quite an art band, and we did things like generally wrote new tracks for each gig and made things quite difficult for ourselves. And we started off with guitars and that kind of thing, which kind of led into making more art projects, so sound art, music-based things that we thought of more as projects than as band music.
It sounds really experimental.
Yeah, it was. As Phil said, we made life quite tough for ourselves by making new sets of songs for every performance. We did quite a lot of just strange gigs, like gigs in forests, gigs in garages. I mean, I don't think we ever properly played a stage, but no, it was good fun. And it kind of set a precedent for like how Phil and I then sort of went on to work together and how we made artwork, which a lot of the early artworks were like performances where we would break things basically as a way of making sound. So calling each other's mobile phones and having those rigged up to a PA and playing songs on the keypads and then burning one of the phones to finish the performance. There's quite a lot of everything would end with something getting broken or something getting burnt. We rode out into a lake in the Lake District with a Walkman and lowered the Walkman into the lake, and the video kind of recorded us rowing out into the water, but the sound of the Walkman sort of drowning as well. So we did a lot of stuff like that where we would break things. It was just at the point where things like mobile phones were suddenly becoming very cheap, very available. You know, you could buy a CD player Walkman for £5, and so it felt a bit like there was all these objects in the world, so maybe making art by sort of destroying some of those objects was kind of useful in a way. I don't know, some kind of idea of environmentalism. But
it sounds like you weren't constrained by objects or materials. It sounds like you were using those without thinking about keeping them afterwards or preserving them in any way.
Yeah, that's right. We were quite into Douglas Copeland, Generation X in particular. I think we were quite influenced by a lot of the ideas in that book and a sense of being kind of weighed down by all these things that were becoming kind of increasingly what now is very kind of mainstream consumer society. So these were things like, you know, like Nokia mobile phones and, as Ben said, CD Walkmans, as well as old cassette Walkmans, and that relationship with technology and society, and also how that kind of work with the natural world. So a lot of the locations for the pieces we were making were in the countryside, and we worked a lot with Grisdale Arts in the Lake District. They were instrumental really for our early pieces, a lot of our early pieces. They allowed us to come up, and they even gave us some budget to make some pieces with, which was really great. This is very soon after art school for us, so to be able to not only have a venue and an interest being taken in our work, and also a budget to realise the pieces was a really amazing thing, and it really kind of kick-started that way of working for us.
Was that little bit of funding, did that give you the confidence to come together collaboratively?
I think it definitely felt like some kind of validation for us. I think it worked quite well for us having like deadlines or goals to work to, like, you know, getting a piece of work made for an event that Grisdale were doing. I think the other kind of catalyst as well was meeting other artists that had a similar sort of concerns and interests. So not necessarily that kind of model of an artist making something in the studio and then putting it into a gallery, but we were meeting lots of artists through Grisdale that were also thinking more in terms of the kind of social and cultural way they worked, I suppose, and how the kind of wider context for what, you know, for making artwork. It was that kind of time when things like relational aesthetics were becoming a kind of more popular theory about ways of making work. So the idea of artists working with people to kind of make work, or collaborating to make artwork. So it kind of very much felt almost like a second art school for us working with Grisdale. We were able to kind of, you know, make these works, work within this kind of amazing landscape, which really sort of facilitated some of the ideas. Our mobile phones literally didn't have any signal there, so you were just basically carrying a piece of plastic around. So what does that plastic mean when it's, you know, it's not doing what it's supposed to do? So all of that, yeah, I think really kind of galvanized us in terms of thinking about what we were doing. And then it seemed to build momentum quite quickly, and kind of off the back of the work we'd made with Grisdale, we then were offered a solo show in London at a place called The Showroom. And then off the back of that, we were selected for a British art show by Hayward Gallery. And so there was, it felt like a lot of momentum built quite quickly.
And what year was that?
So we began working together properly in 2001, and then we worked with Grisdale for a few years, and then the Showroom show happened in 2004, and the British Art Show happened in 2005. And then through the British Art Show, then we'd been working at Icon Gallery, and Jonathan, the director, then invited us to do a solo show with them. And it felt like this quite, there was a lot of kind of acceleration and sort of momentum behind it all. So it really felt like it kind of built and I suppose just evolved with it, really. And by 2005, we were both doing this full-time, sort of self-employed, sort of decided to stop doing other jobs and just kind of focus on this being our job.
And how did that feel, making that decision?
It was very nerve-wracking initially. Obviously, we were a lot younger. We didn't have very many responsibilities. And also, it's something really we'd been working towards. It's why we went to art school. We wanted to be artists full time. Yeah, it was extremely exciting, a little bit nerve-wracking. We were very fortunate, I think, to be working in that period because there was a lot more funding available. There were a lot of opportunities, and those things really helped us a lot to get established and to become working as artists as our sole job and our sole income relatively quickly after leaving art school.
So how did you come up with the name Juno Projects?
Good question. I think it evolved out of being in a band together. There was a kind of precedent at the time for people work together and tended to use their surnames, and we just thought like Duckworth and Sadler sounded a bit like an estate agent's name. So, and we'd been together in the band, and I think something of that dynamic of the band was something we wanted to carry on with, really. And at the time, I think we had the feeling that, you know, it was Phil and I, but it could also be other people as well. So we just thought more of a, almost like a band name basically, would be a good way to go. It just happened at the time Phil was listening to an audiobook that mentioned Juno. I think he thought it was a nice word, and so we switched basically the owner of the band name, which had become Owner Projects by that time, because we were doing more sort of art sound piece type things. So when the band folded, we just literally sort of changed the name to Juno Projects, and then it just kind of stuck. Then
it's a great name.
We kind of found it had these sort of extra meanings that we hadn't really thought of. Like, it's very similar to like jumeau in French, which is twins, and then it's the capital of Alaska, and kind of some of the work we were doing, like in terms of like working with the landscape and stuff, it fitted quite well with that as well. So it's, yeah, it's that kind of, I think we still probably pronounce it wrongly as well. I think it's probably like Juno, but yeah, we choose Juno. So
were you applying for funding regularly for art projects?
We were quite fortunate whereby we didn't have to often apply directly for funding. It's actually something we haven't done very often ourselves, directly apply to the Arts Council. But we were applying for lots of things like open exhibitions. And some of those were things, you know, without any funding, you just send a video off for it to be screened somewhere or that kind of thing. All the sorts of things that early career artists do. So really just trying to be involved in as many things as possible. But yeah, fortunately, we were able to do a number of projects and shows that did have some funding attached, and also apply for things where there was budget. It made it possible for us to make quite a large body of work quite quickly, which again, I think helped kind of consolidate the way we work. We were showing quite a lot, and we were making a lot of new work very regularly and at a very quick pace, which I think gave us that sense of momentum and helped us. It helped us really solidify what we were, the way we worked together. I mean, that sort of sounds like we had some plan. It was fairly ad hoc and fairly ramshackle, but it was happening at a pace and it was giving us the results or the pieces we wanted and the opportunities and shows that we were interested in doing very regularly. So it really helped.
Did you come up with the name Speculary Fricula?
Yes, the title came kind of later on in the project, really. We always find titles quite hard. It takes a while to generate them.
Specular is the type of reflection that was the term used for reflections from a shiny surface. And reflecular is a combination of reflection and spectacular. So it was, as Ben said, it is sometimes quite tough coming up with titles. We find it a bit tough sometimes, especially with collaborative projects like this one where you have to encompass a lot of other people's input.
How did you become involved?
There was an open call out by Trust New Art and the Baths inviting artists to submit expressions of interest. I think for both of us, the idea of working with the Baths was really appealing. It's quite it's one of those buildings that has a sort of kind of mystery and cachet to it, I think. And it's certainly somewhere that's really vivid in my mind. Like I swam there as a child, and it was always synonymous with me for sort of, as I got older, like going out, you know, you'd be on the 50 and you'd go past the bus and that meant you were nearly in town, and that was nearly time to go to the Hummingbird or somewhere like that. So I it's kind of always been a big part of my life in a lot of ways. So I think the opportunity to do something there was seemed really appealing. And we'd worked with the National Trust in the previous year, did a residency at one of their other properties up near Newcastle, a place called Cherryburn, which is the birthplace of a wood engraver, Thomas Bewick, who kind of pioneered a lot of engraving methods. So we'd really enjoyed working with the National Trust on that project. So it seemed like quite a dream opportunity, really, working with National Trust and the Baths. So we submitted the expression of interest. And then from that, a number of artists were invited to come to an open day at the pool and find out more. And from that, kind of on the basis of that, submit a proposal. And I think through the day that we'd been there and kind of finding out a bit more about the pool, the sort of history of it, one of the things that really struck us was the social aspect of the Baths, that it wasn't just about swimming. You know, this had been a real hub of the community in its time. It was literally where people washed and bathed. And also there was a photograph we saw in the Pool of Memories book of the pool boarded over and being used as a social space for dances. And it just, I think that kind of that idea of it being this place of community and how that could seemingly could come back as a thing, you know, a function for the pool really struck us. And that's where the kind of seed of the idea for what we wanted to do came from, really, this idea of inviting the community around the pool to be a part of the project, really.
What are the areas of your work that most excite you? What's integral to the work that you do as artists?
I think one of the most integral things, especially in the more recent phase of our career, is working collaboratively with people. So it's something that we've done from fairly early on, and it's something actually that Grisdale really pushed us towards doing, encouraged us to work collaboratively with other people as well as between ourselves. So it's always been a thread. Increasingly, we've seen how well it works for us as a way of working to allow other people to take part or to encourage other people to take part. It brings a lot of new elements to a piece of work for us. There's a lot of surprises or things that we wouldn't have thought of ourselves that come out of it. And it's the core, really, of the Specular Reflecular project, where we're creating a hand-painted animation, and that's made up of around 600 or so still frames. So obviously to do that ourselves would take a very long time. So opening that up for groups to come along to work with us to help create something like that is, in one way, it's a very practical way of getting a lot of paintings done. But at the same time, it gives a very different feel to the animation. If we'd just painted it in our own painting style, it would look a certain way. But with lots of people joining in, everyone creating their own single frame, each frame has a different look. Each frame has a bit of a character of the person that's made it. And it gives the animation a feeling of lots of people having taken part, while at the same time being cohesive through the sort of motion, the action within the animation.
What I really like about it is that it feels like jigsaw pieces to a larger picture, and that each individual frame, although is beautiful and has the characteristics of the person that is painted on them, when it's put together is part of a bigger picture.
Yeah, definitely. I think that's what appeals to us, and that's the really exciting aspect of it, but also the incredibly scary aspect of it as well, that we're never quite sure how it's going to look. And I think there's always a moment of fear and doubt that it's just not going to work when you assemble it all. But then I think invariably we're just really pleasantly surprised by what it manages to convey. I think one of the things we really like about it is that you just get this range of styles and different ways of painting that I think for us sort of nicely visually represents just this sort of diversity of community that have been involved in the project, really, and hopefully that it's almost like a kind of visual equivalent of that really kind of coming through through all the paintings. And I think one of the aspects we really enjoy as well is that there's this kind of, it's almost like this giant team that have worked together, and you know, people haven't necessarily met each other, but you know, they've painted similar paintings, and when they watch it, they kind of get that sense of hopefully of being part of this kind of bigger group of people that have all helped make this animation come together.
What were the biggest risks and challenges of creating this film?
I think one of the things we always worry about to start with is that, are people even going to be interested? And you know, how do we, I suppose it comes down to, how do you recruit people to the project? How do you get them interested in it? And how do you get them excited? And that's always a really big worry, I think, to start with. What's been lovely with the project at the Baths is that because there's been quite a generous timescale, really, in terms of developing it, it feels like it's happened very organically, so that we had some dates and some workshops in place to start with, but it's been nice how, you know, suggestions have come through people coming to workshops of like, oh, I know this group, you know, I'm part of an organization, would you like to come and work here? So it's felt very nice the way it's kind of developed, and the way it has almost kind of spiderwebbed out, really, from the Baths. So from workshops at the Baths, then working, you know, we've kind of spread out, we've done workshops at the Gap, local schools, Borstalheath Cats group, they were brilliant to work with, and then through Borstalheath Cats we've met other groups, so it's been really nice how it's kind of spiraled out, and then also looking at a kind of wider community we can work with as well. So you know, getting support from the MAC has been great, and being able to do a workshop there, working with Artifact in Sturchley, it's just been really nice how people have kind of, I suppose, almost like bought into the project. I think part of that is the appeal of the Baths, and that's been a really incredible, I suppose, like selling point for the project, really, that people like the Baths and are intrigued by it, and the chance to be involved in something to do with it, people seem to have really, really grasped and enjoyed.
When you see people participating in your work, when you know that you've facilitated that, is there a feeling of achievement? That
very much so, yeah. That's the reason we do it. It's a kind of little micro community for an afternoon that you've helped orchestrate to get people's responses, especially when they've really enjoyed it, or there's a sense that they've taken part in something that they've become quite engaged with, is a really rewarding feeling.
Thank you. Is being in Birmingham important to you, and how does your experience working elsewhere compare to Birmingham?
We work in a variety of locations across the country and also internationally from time to time. And it's always something that's interested us. We've always wanted to both be able to work in Birmingham and the surrounding area, but also much further afield. And those experiences of travel and visiting other places really feed into the projects we do. Obviously, working in Birmingham is great for us because we get to go home in the evening, and also we often get to work with people we know, which is really great.
Do you feel like Birmingham's your home?
Yeah, I think so very much. I think it's, for both of us, Birmingham's been very good to us. I grew up in Birmingham, grew up in Chelmsley Wood, and then moved to King's Heath as a kid. Yeah, I kind of lived in other places, but seem to always gravitate back to Birmingham. And I think Birmingham somewhere feels enjoyed and adopted as a home. I think there's just something about it that perhaps suits our temperament, really. It's got a friendliness to it as well, I think, that's really nice. I always think back to a BRNB news report I heard that Birmingham residents had voted the onion as their favourite vegetable, and I think that's quite almost a good sort of metaphor for why we like Birmingham, really. It's
multi-layered.
Yeah, definitely. There was another thing on the same report where someone from Birmingham said, well, everyone in London is, you know, and in the South, they're all full of being from the South, and all everyone from the North is really, you know, oh, we're from the North, and we just get on with it in Birmingham and in the Midlands. And I think that's sort of part of the spirit that we quite enjoy about being here.
I think you've hit the nail on the head there, really. What research did you do before starting this particular project?
We visited the baths on the open day for the call out for the project. So that was a big inspiration. As Ben mentioned, he'd already been there swimming, but I'd never been inside before. So that was a real revelation to see both the pool and the gala pool without any water in it. That space really, really struck us and really got us thinking about the project. We got a copy of the Pool of Memories book as well. We used that as one of the main sources of research, as well as meeting the staff and volunteers. We held a session at the pool very early in the project where we met some of them, just chatted really about what we were planning and if they had any suggestions or what they thought about the idea. So that was a very key part of the inspiration for the project.
Once installed, how do you think it will be received?
Hopefully really well. We were keen to do something with a projection and with light. It's a huge space, really. You know, to try and fill that physically with objects would be very daunting. I think what we're hoping is that the projection itself, the colours from the projection, the sound that will accompany the film, hopefully they'll have kind of space to kind of move around in the space and sort of people will enjoy watching the film, enjoy the experience of being in that space, and also take in that space and enjoy that space. And hopefully, I think what we're hoping is it'll, you know, people will just take a few minutes out of their day. I suppose it's similar to what we enjoy about the painting workshops. There's that sort of slowness to it and that kind of calmness to it, and hopefully something of that will come through to people in the installation as well, and they can enjoy the film, they can enjoy the sound, they can enjoy the space and the pool and its history and its place within the community. Really quite a mindful experience, I suppose, hopefully.
What memorable responses have you had to your work, both positive and negative?
There was a Channel 5 programme about the British Art Show when we were in it. In that documentary about the exhibition, they did a little feature on our work in it. The reporter called us the Jackass TV of British art, which was a very memorable quote, I think, and managed to find the one bit of footage that we'd put in as a bit of joke at the end of one of the videos as the kind of footage that really supported that idea, I think, visually. It was us wearing baseball caps running down a hill rather stupidly. So yeah, that's something that has kind of definitely stayed with me as a review.
How do you think artists pave their way in this day and age? Have you learnt to adapt? And if so, does this compromise or empower you?
That's a really good question. I think we definitely feel like we've been very lucky with the opportunities we've had. I think for both of us, you know, we got to go to university, to art school at a time when there were still grants. It was a lot easier to be at college in a lot of ways and didn't come out with kind of crippling debt. So I think that's definitely something that was very helpful for us. And I do feel it must be a lot more pressure on students these days finishing art, going to art college. I think I, you know, if I was going now, it would be a much harder choice of what to study and you know, whether to study, really. So, and I think also we've benefited a lot from generous funding as well, like at the point, you know, at the times that we were developing our career. And I think it feels like quite a different political climate now for young artists, so we've definitely benefited from the sort of times that we've been making work. The thing that's helped us a lot has been working together. The art world can be quite a tough place sometimes, and it's really helpful having someone to kind of share that with. You know, I can't quite imagine the pressure if you're thinking of projects we've done and been through and sort of situations we've been through, how much more stressful that might be coping with on your own. It's definitely been a kind of almost like a safety mechanism for us, really, being able to work together. I think one thing that has really benefited us really is like you say, a kind of willingness to look at how we can evolve and adapt and react to what's happening, really, which is what we've always tried to do, really. It was right from the start, you know, we were kind of doing workshops and engagement stuff for galleries. And I think there was a point where we thought, like, why are we seeing these workshops and this engagement as something separate or outside of the work we're making? Can this be the work, you know? And making that decision, it suddenly means you're kind of opening up these sort of new windows, really, and ways of funding and financing your work and placing an importance on those things that hopefully lets us make meaningful projects and work that way. I think we have had to adapt and evolve to survive and to carry on, and I think luckily the sort of structure we have allows us to do that. I think it's difficult, it's really difficult. I wouldn't want to go back there, basically. But then I think the good thing is you have a lot of naivety and a lot of ego when you're a younger artist, so that kind of definitely helps you through as well, I think.
Is there anything that you wouldn't do? Have you turned down work?
We very rarely turn down work. I think there's a few things where the context isn't right for us, or a particular theme or focus. It doesn't happen very often, but occasionally you get asked to either apply for or work on a project where the theme is something that we feel doesn't really work within the type of themes we want to address. But no, it happens very rarely.
The exhibition starts on the 5th of March. Will you be there? Are you nervous about being there on that first day?
We might well be popping in. Yeah, it depends how things go on the opening the night before. But no, we'll keep it calm at the opening, and we'll be able to pop along for the first day of the show.